Cinema! Cinema!
You're listening to the Cinemaphile Podcast with Andrew Shearer, brought to you by OnlineAthens.com.
Let's start.
Okay. Everyone, thank you for listening to the Cinemaphile Podcast. This is the Friday 5 episode. I'm here with my friend Sam. Hi, Sam.
Hello.
Sam and I have been podcasting together for a long time. Well, our first podcast we did was in 2006.
Yeah. Although I think we podcasted before there were podcasts, like back at the video store when we would just talk about movies.
Yeah, we would just talk. We worked at We could say Blockbuster now that it's no longer a thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah. We worked at Blockbuster together in the 90s. Yeah, we would talk about, and I had like a little zine that I made like two issues of. That was the way we did it back then. It was true nerd stuff. Actually, podcast is a pretty nerdy thing to do, I think. Don't you?
I totally agree. It is. It's not as nerdy to listen to them as it is to actually make them.
I was going to say that if you didn't. If people that like listen to podcasts, I have a lot of friends that listen to them. I don't have many friends that listen to mine. I have a few that listen to mine.
Yeah.
But I have many that like that just, you know, that enjoy like a lot of podcasts or whatever. But making a podcast, it's a
great,
nerdy thing to do.
It is, and you have to be interesting enough for people to want to listen every month. So
that's the hard part. Well, you know, I like talking to you about movies, and I like, you know,
I like talking to you about movies, so it works well.
I always have. And you know, I love talking to my friends, talking with my friends about movies. When it comes to strangers, though, I find it very difficult to find a podcast about movies that I'm interested in. I think we've talked about this before, but the one I like the most is the Rialto Report, which talks about like golden age porn and exploitation.
That sounds interesting.
It is, man, because they track down the people that were in them and talk to them. And there's, you know, there's a lot of crossover into cult film with that too. There was one where they interviewed Uschi Daigard. There was one where they talked to Roberta Finlay. So, I mean, it's definitely got some like cult film appeal, but, God, who doesn't want to know those stories and hear about that stuff? It's just fascinating to me. And the people take it really seriously, and it's a man and woman host, right? That's our dynamic.
It is totally our dynamic.
Yeah. I always thought we should have had a drive time talk show, me and you. That would have been the best.
That would have been really cool.
It would have. And satellite radio would have been good for us because then it could be an uncensored format.
Yes. It's so hard to hold the Fs in sometimes.
we would be able to be our true selves like we were when we started. You know,
yes, can you imagine the intros from our old podcast? They would never work on this one.
No, I'm fairly certain that, you know, even though...
Tony the Tiger.
God, that was great. It was great. We had so many good ones. Now, I'm a representative of my, you know, like the corporate owners at all times, so I got to conduct myself accordingly.
It's fair.
But, it's my hope that they hear this and go, you know, this guy... We need to put him on a satellite radio and let that Sam come with him. She seems like they work well together. They seem like they've known each other a minute.
Just a little bit.
Yep. So anyway, if you've never listened to the Friday Five, this is what we do. Sam and I grab five movies that we watched since the last time we recorded. And we talk about them. And I've got five. You got five. So you want to start?
Yes, I will start. Okay. I'm going to start with the movie that's not the oldest one I watched out of these five, but the oldest movie. It's from 2015,
okay.
Which is Tomorrowland. So I know. It took me a long time to get to it.
That's okay. I love Tomorrowland.
So does my fiance. And so I finally watched it. Okay. So the movie was absolutely nothing that I was expecting it to be. I really do steer clear of like spoilers and people ruining stuff for me ever since my mother once ruined a movie for me. And that was sad. Anyway, so Tomorrowland, obviously it's kind of bounces around from different eras. We start off the movie, this young kid back in, is it the 60s World Fair, trying to get his like invention into like the inventor hall or whatever. And, this girl is intrigued by him and gives him this kind of pass, let's say, to this other dimension where inventors and artists and creative people kind of all live to try to invent and create things that would better humanity and the earth and all of that. So then we jump to present day, and here we have this girl who gets selected as well, and her journey through this. And I won't give away too much, but I thought it was really interesting. So here's what I felt about the movie. I liked it a lot. I felt like there were times during the film where they were beating a message into my head a little bit too much, where they could have laid off just a little with us destroying ourselves as a humanity, because I totally, like, I got it the first, second time that they mentioned it. So I felt like that was a little bit much for me. However, I loved the acting. I loved the way it jumped around from different time periods to kind of show this story as a whole and what happened to these people that are part of this whole process and this group. And yeah, I thought it was great. I thought it was a great movie. I just could have been a little shorter because I felt like it dragged in a couple spots for me. But
well, that movie ended up on my top 10 of the year that year. It might have been in the top 5. They really did not advertise it properly. It was kind of a lie. You know, they used the fact that George Clooney was in it, even though he's not a major character. They hid the fact that it was a female-driven story and that the lead character was a female. Mm-hmm. And you didn't see like that female robot at all, even though she was amazing. And even in the posters, they showed the girl from the back. It was crazy how much they tried to hide that this was a movie. They wouldn't do that now. You know, in our post Wonder Woman world, they wouldn't do that now. But yeah, they screwed themselves by, because that's what I heard from people. They didn't go see it, and then they watched it, and they're like, dude, this movie was great. What? No, yeah, no. Tomorrowland is great. I'm glad you finally saw it. I love Tomorrowland. Great.
I think the other thing, too, is like the previews and the trailers for this film never really give you any hint to the plot whatsoever.
No.
Like, it just looks like a sci-fi futuristic movie, but that's actually not really true. Like, that's not even what the premise is. It's not necessarily about the future. It's about like the present. And yep. So, yeah, I agree that the trailers don't do the movie justice whatsoever. I really liked it. I think it's actually a very timely piece, and maybe even more so than it was 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe it's possible that me watching it now, I felt like those subjects were kind of being pushed too much, but maybe that's because that's what I feel like I see every day this year. And maybe it wasn't quite as in your face every day of 2015. Yeah. So.
Well, also you can keep in mind, it's a Disney movie and it's made for children. And so something that you might get and even pick up on context is not something that they are necessarily going to get like you would. So yeah, they need to be a little bit more like, I don't know. I think pervasive is the right word. You know, they have to kind of reiterate it, and they do have to be a little bit more heavy-handed with their messages, so that the kid will get it.
I don't necessarily think it's a kid's movie, though. I think it's really much more of an adult movie.
That was like, the big criticism.
The topics are very, I mean, I get it. It's PG. Like, there's nothing, like, controversial or, like, sexually overt or anything in the film whatsoever. So I get the PG rating, but it's not necessarily, like, a kid's movie. Like, the topics that they are trying to tackle in this film are very adult topics. And so, yeah.
Okay.
But no, I agree. People should go see it.
Yeah, it was, no, that was part of the big criticism of it. But I'm so glad you saw it. Let me make sure I don't skip around here. I'm going to try and go in order that I saw these. So the one I want to talk about is, I've got two documentaries that I want to talk about. The first one is called Pretend We're Dead. And this is a documentary about the band L7, mm-hmm. which, most people are going to remember from the 90s. I don't think they did. They had any greater success than they did during the 90s, and they were part of Lollapalooza at one point. But the documentary is brand new, and it is awesome. And I was like, you know, I was kind of like L7. I was more into like you know, some of the satellite groups like Babes in Toyland or mm-hmm. Hole or even you know some of the Riot Girl groups. I liked Excuse 17. And I liked Bikini Kill, but they are they really were pioneering, and they were had a higher visibility than I think maybe all those bands except for Hole. And I realized that like I didn't know very much about them, and so the documentary does a really awesome job of presenting a band who doesn't have like any sort of big like death or scandal or anything that happened to it, but they were trying to juggle like rock star life with real life and the realities of what how financially successful a group really is versus how famous they are mm-hmm. is like extremely eye-opening for the average person to watch. So that is kind of what Pretend We're Dead is about. It's about how like these women had this band together and they toured all over the world and they made album after album, but they did not get rich. They
right.
were, and I think a lot of people think that as soon as you come in and the band starts making money, that equals, you know, financial success for the individual people in the group. And it did not happen. And, the weird thing about Pretend We're Dead, and the only reason that I wasn't like extremely happy with the result is that it chooses to just use narration from the people in the band to tell the story. They've got a ton of archival footage, great photos, great video. There's a lot of documentation about L7. However, I would have liked to see some on-camera, like, current interviews with them. You know what I mean? And it's not about, like, physical appearance and seeing what they look like now, because my guess is probably they don't look too much different. But it was missing that connection that documentaries normally have. Cause right. I really wanted to see them talk on camera. Cause there's something that does to you that a voiceover kind of does not, but I can understand why they made the choice, but that would be my only criticism of Pretend We're Dead. But if you're a fan of like 90s rock music and you don't know L7, this is the best introduction I could possibly think of because it is full of awesome music and great stories and really tells you a lot about the way music was back then. Were you a fan of L7? Do you remember them?
I do remember them. I have like maybe one or two of their albums, nothing, but I don't know that I was like really big into them or sought them out. They're kind of one of the many 90s band that when they came on the radio, I listened to, I liked a couple of their songs, but when they kind of died off, like they died off for me as well. Now, there certainly are 90s bands that I still listen to this day religiously. They just don't happen to be one. So
they didn't have the like the radio ready hits, you know. They didn't right. have the singles really. They were more of just like a an album oriented group, and definitely live very very good, but I'm just happy that they kind of emerged unscathed. You know, there was no huge tragedy that went on with them, because like if you saw Hit So Hard, which was the whole documentary,
mm-hmm.
I mean that, whoa, you know what I mean? So this it's a good companion to that. Or if you like movies like the Gitz documentary is also really, really good. But again, huge, huge tragedy there.
Yeah.
So, but it made me happy to know that L7 always got along, like that core group. It was pretty great.
That's kind of cool. I feel like that's really rare.
It was not a story about women versus women. It was. It made me feel really happy to get behind that. All right, man. Let's see what you got.
I have King Arthur, Legend of the Sword.
I didn't see that.
I feel like very many people didn't see it. however, I went into it because it went to theaters and then it was like out of theaters like the next day. It was not there long. And it came out like right around Memorial Day or something. And so I was, you know, expecting it to be like this big blockbuster hit, and you saw the previews everywhere. And so it was really strange that it didn't last very long. So I was expecting it to be terrible. And it wasn't terrible. So Guy Ritchie is the director, first of all. So if you like Guy Ritchie films, you will like this film. Like if you like Guy Ritchie films, the way he directs, like how the films look and feel, you will like this film. But I thought it was an interesting take on the story of King Arthur and how he becomes king and kind of the backstory from him at pretty much birth. It talks about like his father and how his father loses power, which his father's played by Eric Bana, great actor. And how his father loses power to his uncle, played by Jude Law, another great actor. And I don't know, it was just a really kind of fun action film, period piece, but very stylized with the Guy Ritchie style, much like the Sherlock movies with Robert Downey Jr. And so it was a lot more entertaining and enjoyable than I was expecting. And that also made me wonder why then it did so poorly at the theaters for it to actually be just kind of a fun movie, unless people are just not into King Arthur these days. And that could totally be it.
If I was going to theorize, I would say that, when the Sherlock Holmes movies were done, Robert Downey Jr. was a pretty big star.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that was post Iron Man. That was his first post Iron Man thing he did, right?
True.
Had he done that before Iron Man, I don't know how successful that would have been. The thing with King Arthur was they're wanting to build a franchise around this thing, even though no one's asking for that.
I don't know. They didn't really set it up for a sequel.
But trust me, they were hoping this would be a big jump off. And the guy that they have, you know, this probably would have worked on TV, but not in the theaters. And, Guy Ritchie, he's a fine filmmaker, loved the Sherlock Holmes movies. But again, this was not something that I was necessarily like clamoring to see him do, even though I get why he would be great for it. Particularly the angle they took of him coming from the streets and stuff like that. Like this is a thing that Guy Ritchie knows. And I would much rather see Guy Ritchie do period piece than I would see him do a contemporary thing, because I was never a fan of his Lock, Stock, and Snatch and all that. They were all the same movie to me.
Sure.
He didn't get interesting until he started. But yeah, I think that was why everybody was just like, King Arthur, is there a Transformer in it? Was this Marvel's King Arthur? Well, then I don't want to see it.
Well, and what I think is interesting, like even going further into the cast, so you have Jimon Hounsou is in it as well. I love him in everything, including the Queen Latifah movie. Oh, what? And I can't remember it. Beauty Shop. Like, I even like him in those movies. so, like, he was great. There is a very strong female character in this film who is played by some actress that I unfortunately don't know the name of. So I think that like it has a lot of pieces and elements to it where, I don't know, it's actually an interesting take on the story. It doesn't necessarily follow the traditional stories that you've heard before, but I didn't expect it to with Guy Ritchie. And it has that stylized look to a lot of the fighting scenes. And it's really, I thought it was really well done. So I enjoyed it quite a bit. I would recommend it to people if you're looking for something and you just aren't sure. I would put this one on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, why not, right? I mean, it's not going to be bad. It's just, it was one of those, it was a little mind-boggling that they did it. Kind of like that Mummy with Tom Cruise. I'm like, who, what made y'all think, what? You know what I mean? Like, what right. was, where was the research on this?
Yeah. I mean, there's no Richard Gere and there's no Sean Connery, but.
Right. First Night.
Actually, I liked it better than First Night. So, you know.
That was a big hit. I remember Blockbuster. That was a big one.
It was a huge hit. I liked it better than First Night. So.
Yeah, they used to give us like, what, 100 copies whenever like one of those movies would come out, you know?
Oh, totally.
Like I remember that first Mission Impossible, the Tom Cruise one. Like they gave us so many. It took up like the half of the back wall and it still like sold out, you know?
Yeah.
You tell people that now and they're like, what? You know, just imagine if the only way you could see Stranger Things was on a tape.
Oh my God. Oh my God. People would be making it come out at midnight.
Yes. No, no. They would be trying to kill us for yes. movies like they used to in the 90s. let's see. Speaking of Marvel, I've got Thor Ragnarok, which is the third of the Thor movies, but it is the...
I'm so excited for this movie.
It is the... Well, I was excited too. It's like the 17th of the Marvel Cinematic Universe things. And I'll say this, man. I've not seen all of these Marvel movies. I don't care about them all. I once you see a couple, you're kind of like know what you're going to get. Except for... Thor is very, very different from the other Thor movies. And it is very, very different from all of the other ones. And I put it up there with my favorite of the Marvels, which are Ant-Man and Doctor Strange. Because the guy that made it is Taika Waititi. And he makes comedies. He made Hunt for the Wilder People. He made What We Do in Shadows.
I love his movie so much.
Yeah, and you go like, well, why? Why would they pick him to do Thor necessarily?
Why it's, not?
Well, that's the thing. They can yeah. they now realize because of the success of Guardians of the Galaxy that people will go anywhere. They will follow these characters anywhere. And it's a way to keep it fresh. And the space thing is something that people enjoy. So they finally did with Thor what I wish they always did with He-Man, which was just keep him out there. Keep him in this fantasy world. But also there's something like very, very Flash Gordon. I'm talking about the Flash Gordon movie. Or there's something very, very kind of 80s about it. But it also, as far as the art design goes, very, very much rooted in like a comic book style, like the Jack Kirby style. They even have like – I've seen comparisons between comic panels from the 60s and 70s. And the background. So the Thor Ragnarok is very, very colorful. And it's not dumb. And it's also like Guardians of the Galaxy 2, I didn't actually like. And I don't like rewatching Guardians of the Galaxy because I, as much as I used to enjoy James Gunn, that style of smart aleck and self-referential is a little too cocky for me. Mm-hmm. And I prefer the way that Thor is, which is a more kind of Monty Python, Hitchhiker's Guide, very goofy. By comparison. And yeah. It's such a good movie. It's one of the best comic book movies they've done, to be quite honest. I wanted to go back and see it again, which I can't say for very many of those other ones that I saw. You don't need to know a lot of stuff. That's also yeah. great. You don't need to have seen other ones. It's not like, you know, like a lot of, one of them I saw was so much like, so clearly just trying to be an in-between setup for some other movies. Like, what?
Oh, this
isn't even, I was like, this isn't even a plot.
Right.
This is just like an episode of a TV show that I just started watching.
So I was really excited about this one. So I like the Captain America series and I really like the Thor series. And those are the kind of the two that I really enjoy out of the Marvel series. I'm not including X-Men because X-Men is like a whole different thing to me because they don't necessarily fall into the Avengers yet.
No, and a piece of garbage person has seems to always make those too. So somebody make one that's not a piece of garbage. That would be nice.
But the Thor movies I've always really liked. And so I liked the first one. I liked the second one even more. And I've been really excited about the third one. And then I saw who was directing it. Was like, oh my God, this is just like two of my favorite things coming together. Yes. How can you make hot chocolate better? Add marshmallows, like woo. And so
you're crazy.
And so I really am excited to see this one, and I'm glad that it sounds like it doesn't disappoint. So
no, dude, no. You'll be like, there was times where I was like thinking about like Neverending Story when I was watching it.
That's awesome. Like,
really, and it's also Marvel's first female villain.
Well, and she looks so kick-ass, so.
She does. She does. I wish I could tell you what she does when she shows up, but I want you to be surprised.
Okay, I'll be surprised.
Yeah. All right, man, go for it.
My next one is It Comes at Night. So supposed to be a horror film that came out earlier this year. I don't know that I would classify it as horror or not. It's one of these weird movies recently that I feel like have come out, sort of like Girl with All the Gifts, where it's maybe set a little bit in like a horror base, but that's not really what the film or the movie is necessarily about. Like it has much more deeper meaning and topics that are like beyond your traditional horror base. I do think this one is horror in the fact that it looks at the horrific parts of humanity in a what I assume to be some type of post-apocalyptic world where people are now cut off from society completely, left to fend for themselves and figure out how to survive. So, and then what people will do to survive is really what this film is about. And I think that that's probably the most horrific thing you can ever look at sometimes is what people will do just to survive themselves instead of trusting and helping others. So I enjoyed it. I wasn't necessarily expecting horror, scary type film to begin with. So, but surprisingly, there were a few spots in it that I actually did jump. And I was like, oh, okay. But no, I really liked it quite a bit. I like Joel Edgerton. I think he's a very good actor, and most everything I've seen him in recently, I've really enjoyed. So I don't know. Did you see this one?
Yeah, I did. I did an entire, like, I published my notes about it. But I remember, like, really liking Trey Edward Schultz, the director, his previous movie, which was called Creesha. Mm-hmm. But that is not a, it's a horror movie, but it's like, kind of like this. It's not horror in the like traditional sense. You know, it right. all takes place in a, I think it's like Thanksgiving or Christmas. And it's just like his, this woman who's, has been estranged from her family and she comes back. But I liked how he kept things mysterious and didn't feel his need to explain everything. Creesha was missing a finger.
Right.
That was awesome, you know? But so I was like, well, they were marketing It Comes at Night more to horror. And I think that made horror fans angry because the people that would go to see like a Paranormal Activity or a Conjuring, that's not the audience for these things.
Oh, no.
But they try to like get those people in because like the art fart people aren't going to go see something if they think it's a cheesemo horror either.
But so, they should because that's totally this movie.
I know. But as a result, everybody was mad. And then there was an article about it that talked about racism within the movie. And I was like, oh, boy, they're right. There was some stuff in there. So it's but it sparked good discussion. I think it's well made, very tense, great performances, and shows some restraint, which in the commercial world in any genre is kind of like still unheard of. So if it makes you feel things, makes you think things, and you know, I remember it was on my mind when I woke up the next day. So that to me, yeah, it can be problematic and still be worth watching.
Yeah, and I think that... I really respected the restraint to some extent in terms of I didn't need to see everything that happened to feel the same emotion that I would have had I seen it. And I also was totally fine with like so many blanks being left out. Like, what happened? Why were we in this post-apocalyptic type world? What was this crazy disease that people were catching or that was they were afraid of or whatever? Why was it specifically that they were afraid of things at night? Like, you never get the answers to those questions. Sorry, spoiler. But I was okay with that because the other messages and plot points of the movie were just so big in yeah. some ways that I don't know that I wanted all of that other stuff. Like, it didn't really matter. So yeah, I enjoyed it.
That's because you're a grown up is why. You can handle that when movies aren't exactly, you know what I mean? They don't stick to the formula.
Sure.
I really have no interest in movies that do that. Let's see. What else do I have? I saw this one called Columbus. Speaking of indies, Columbus is great. And the guy who made the movie, Kogonada, not sure what is if that's his first or last name, but he's known for doing these essays about famous filmmakers. He does visual essays comparing recurring visual themes, for the most part, in people like Terrence Malick, Stanley Kubrick, Wes Anderson, like all the, you know what I mean? Like all the kind of big filmmaker names or modern filmmakers. And so it was interesting to me that he was then making his own feature film. I was like, what is this going to be? Am I going to see the influence of all of these movies that he's, you know, picked apart and analyzed?
Right.
Like, I was like, is that going to distract me from the story? Which is, it has a great story. But as it turns out, he's just a really good filmmaker. I was so happy about that. It's got John Cho, who I guess is maybe best known for the Star Trek movies. I haven't seen him in a ton of stuff. Harold and Kumar, I think, is John Cho.
I've seen him in a couple things. He's in the new season of The Exorcist.
Well, I'd have to watch TV. I watched one of The Exorcist because Amanda told me to. But he's the beginning of the movie just shows like a woman on the phone, and it's one wide shot, and it doesn't cut away, and it doesn't zoom in, nothing. And then you see this guy walking with an umbrella, and he just falls on the ground. And right away, that's like a very, very intriguing thing. So you're getting pieces of story as it goes. And it turns out that was John Cho's character's father, who was like a brilliant architect. And he's in a coma. And so he's got to come and sort of hang out in this small town, this college town, and just sort of be there for whatever happens next with his dad. And as the story goes, he meets a woman that's there with her mom. And they both have things that are like keeping them there. And so they develop this sort of bond over that. And all the meanwhile, those visual themes come out in the fact that architecture has a lot to do with the movie. And so like you start to look at, and I say you, me, I'm looking at how like deliberate he was with like lines and stuff like that in the visuals and stuff. And every shot is set up in a very interesting way to the point that like the camera moves very, very little. It's so cool. It was so good, but it doesn't overpower the story and doesn't seem like some... some like fart smelling thing. You know what I mean? It's actually very solid, very, very interesting movie. And I just got really caught up with it. I think Kogonada, I was sitting there going like, I wish he had other movies I could watch, but he'd never been on a movie set before. And you would never know that from watching this.
That's crazy. He's
purely a student of movies. Just purely someone that just watched them and then went and made a great one that's not like this ripoff of everything or this homage to everything. You can't necessarily – he's not wearing those influences on his sleeve. He's making his own thing. It's kind of what you hope for with stuff like that, but hardly ever happens. So it's called Columbus because that's the place where – that's the town where it takes place in. But man, is it good. It was great on the big screen too. I'm glad I got to check that out.
That sounds cool.
It is, man. You'll like it.
My next movie is Gifted with Chris Evans, Octavia Spencer. Jenny Slate was in it. I didn't even know from the preview that Jenny Slate is in this film.
I like Jenny Slate.
I do too. So when she finally came on screen, I was like, oh, wow. Okay, cool. This just got even better. Yay. Like marshmallows. Okay. Anyway.
I can't believe you just said that.
So I like I liked this movie. It is probably your atypical kind of feel sad, feel good movie, because I don't really know what you call those otherwise. Chris Evans plays this character, Frank, whose sister dies, and he is in custody of his niece and pretty much raises his niece from the infancy through, I guess in this movie, she's like 6 or 7. And come to find out that she's really smart, like college level smart in mathematics. And he wants to really raise her as a normal kid. And when the school finds out that the kid's gifted, well, they contact the grandma, who never wanted to have anything to do with the kid. But now all of a sudden grandma's interested and wants the kid to go to like gifted schools and stuff. And so, yeah, it was, you know, it's a pretty typical story, pretty typical plot line. I can't say there's anything in it that's like unexpected, but the funny moments are really endearing and kind of fun to watch. And Chris Evans, not just playing some action movie or Captain America, is really enjoyable. And then both Octavia Spencer and Jenny Slate are both really funny. So there's a lot of really hilarious moments in the film that just make it really good. The grandma's played by Lindsay Duncan, who I like a lot too. So it was a good, fun little film.
I was told by my mother-in-law that I need to watch Gifted because of my kid, that apparently she saw some similarities. So
there you go. I don't know. I suspect your kid is probably just as hilarious as the kid in this film. And man, she has some zinger of lines and just has that childhood innocence humor mm-hmm. of things that it's really great. Like whoever wrote the script really kind of knew where they were coming from on the characters. And so that was nice to see. So yeah,
I missed that one, but I've heard now a couple of really good endorsements. That's got me curious if nothing else.
There you go.
I think it's on Prime. No,
I'm a Netflixer.
Right. Okay, changing gears here. One I watched very recently called Bitch, and it is appropriately named because the woman who wrote and directed it also plays the lead character, and the lead character is a suburban mom who saps and becomes a dog, a vicious dog. Not as in like werewolves out. She just starts peeing in the floor, crapping in the floor, growling, scratching, and basically has to be put into the basement while her husband, who is played by Jason Ritter, and his two children figure out what they are going to do now that mom has snapped. It's great.
I love Jason Ritter.
It is a great concept. However, it is not treated like some ridiculous, campy thing, even though it is a comedy because of how bizarre the plot is. But mm-hmm. I watched it without even having seen a trailer or know nothing about it. I really just was like, whoa, that's a great idea. Because Jason Ritter's character, the husband, thinks that because he has a high-paying job and works really hard, that that excuses him from the duties of just being not only a dad, but a part of the household and even like a really like a decent human being. He is a piece of crap when the movie starts. He is a jerk. And that's part of the reason why she snaps, is because he doesn't have respect for the fact that her job is also extremely demanding and very, very hard too. And he's not helping. And I guess this is a movie that probably somebody, maybe a lot of people, could identify with. And I think that had it been like a mainstream release, people could really kind of get behind, because I promise you there's people out there, probably the person that wrote it or someone she knows, has had that thing where they're just like, this is it. this is my breaking point. I'm just going to tear all my clothes off and shave my head and just run in the streets. I mean, it's a thing that you talk about it and you think about it and go like, God, I've had that thought. I've had that feeling at some point where you're just like, this is it. I can't take anymore. But usually with life, you find out how much you can take. But it is great. And it is very well made. And it's treated seriously, actually, you know, which is the best way to play something like that. But I've talked to no one who has seen this movie.
Interesting.
Yeah, but it was great.
Was it like an art house release? Like it got, just a couple play, or did it go straight to?
Yeah, I watched it on video on demand. It was not. I mean, you can't put a movie called Bitch into like, you know, the mall multiplex and have the posters up and stuff. You know, ads for it. That's not a thing that can happen. So, but it'll probably end up on Netflix really, really soon. That's the way the things usually are when they go straight to VOD. Us big nerds watch them immediately, and then within a couple of weeks they're on Netflix.
Gotcha. Interesting. I really like Jason Ritter. I've liked him in everything I've seen him in, so
he's good. He's very believable as that character. He's very, very good at it, but it doesn't go the way you think with him, which is great. And there's some very, very memorable scenes. I was very shocked at some of the stuff that happened in a good way.
Yeah. Cool. Well, my last one is a TV series because, you know, like everybody else, I watched Stranger Things 2 like in the matter of a couple days just so I could get through the entire season, and purposely before I went on a trip because I did not want someone to ruin it for me. I was like, I don't want somebody to say something and me to be like, oh, great, now I know all what's going to happen. So I really enjoyed season one of Stranger Things. That it was one of those things where I'm watching it and I'm like, is this really happening? Are we really watching like a mini series with these actors and characters set in the era of my childhood? And all the things that I find like kind of cool and nods and endearing and interesting about being a kid in the 80s. With like such a interesting horror kind of sci-fi theme. And so I really enjoyed season one. I was pretty hesitant about season two because usually good things like that tend to not always hold up in sequels or additional seasons. Season two was for me just as good as the first. And I feel like season two was a little bit different in how they approached the pacing. So in season one, things like kind of geared up pretty quick and stayed like at this high intense level throughout most of the season. And season two was a really slow build. So, you know, you kind of have the calming down of everything that happened in the first season, like time has passed. We're picking the characters up like a year later, you know, things have happened, things have changed, so on, so on. And the season starts off with that kind of very low-key first episode, and then each episode builds, and then like the last couple episodes are so intense. And like the emotions, and you're on the edge of your seat watching them. So it was interesting whether or not that was done on purpose or not. It was an interesting feeling for the series to build that way. I also liked there was one episode that only had one character in it from the first season, and all the rest were new characters and out of the town. It wasn't even, it was set in Chicago, like a really interesting, almost like out of arc type story, even though it kind of helped progress the story. It just was like, here, let's take a break from the craziness that's going on back in the small little town and let's head to Chicago and check out this thing that's happening and take your mind off of that for an entire episode and then come back. What's cool is they've now introduced another female character who is pretty kick-ass as well. And so it'll be interesting to see if that comes back around in any of the future seasons or not. But that was pretty awesome. So I don't know. I don't know if you watched the series or not, but I obviously don't want to spoil it and give too much away. There's a lot of things in this season that felt much more Lovecraftian than the first season did. So I really appreciated that because I do like a lot of the horror films that are a little bit more based on Lovecraft and stuff like that. I mean, you know, I love In the Mouth of Madness. And so I appreciated those nods kind of there. And I really enjoyed it. So I'm pretty sure most of the world did enjoy the second season. So,
yeah, I think they did. I couldn't get into Stranger Things. Everybody was really surprised by that. I don't want to go off on a rant about it.
No, it's, I get it. Not everything's for everyone. So,
yeah, well, that was the thing. I think they really, 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 really tried to be for me because I grew up in the 80s. And the harder they pushed on that, the more I was like, oh, dude, you can't be yet that. I actually remember the 80s and I remember 80s movies and I get what you're doing here. And then with the CGI, and I was like, there was no 80s. There's no CGI in the 80s. What are you doing? Yeah. And it took me completely out of it. I'm like, you can't go that far and then throw that in there. And for it not to throw me off who you're trying to play to. Like, you know what I mean? So they're selling me one thing, and then, you know, then they kind of just really dropped the ball on what I felt was the most important part. Because part of why the 80s are so fetishized, I said I wasn't going to rant about it, and I am. Sorry, you brought it up.
That's all right.
Part of the reason why the 80s are so fetishized by people my age and are so, like, continually bought and sold back to us, and we totally buy into it, is because it was the boom of makeup special effects. The 80s were a renaissance with creatures and animatronics and prosthetics and all of that stuff. That was one of the defining characteristics of 80s in terms of genre filmmaking. So why Stranger Things would stop there and go CGI, I have no clue, and I wish someone would explain it to me. And yeah, I know that doesn't bother some people, but what I'm saying is they were really going 80s, 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 and I was like, I get it, I get it, I get it. And then that to me was just – it was a deal breaker for me, and that's why I didn't watch it. A lot of people want to know why I didn't watch it. That's why I didn't watch it, because he thought,
that's fair.
You know, Andrew, you're 40. You remember all this stuff. It's like, yes, I do, and that's the problem.
Yeah. Well, Sean Astin and Paul Reiser are in season 2, who were not in season 1. And so
I watched a few.
It was kind of cool to see. It was kind of cool to see them in roles, in some new roles that were created in this season. So
yeah, no, I'm just overly critical of anything that tries that hard to be 80s, because so many things do. And then it's like, but wait. But I was very critical of Grindhouse as well, because for all its CGI that it used, you know? Mm-hmm. So like you're trying to sell me an authentic experience here, and then, you know, you cheap out. I don't really, really get it. The effects in Stranger Things honestly remind me a lot of like 90s stuff, like Silent Hill.
Yes. Or
Silent Hill was not even 90s, it was 2000s. That's how far off they were. Okay, sorry. My last one that I watched, and I just saw this last night, is a documentary called Gilbert. And it is about the comedian Gilbert Gottfried. Now, even if you hate him, you would be curious to find out if this guy's for real or not. If he's screaming 24/7 in his life, if his voice is like that all the time, and if not, why and when and how did he come up with this? And did someone hit him in the back when he was doing it and he stuck like that? I feel like there's enough fascination for Gilbert Gottfried as a cultural figure and as a very important comedian of his generation, enough for like people to at least want to watch a little bit of it. I watched the entire thing. I absolutely loved it. This movie gets into right away the home life of this guy. Did you know he had a wife and 2 children?
Interesting.
Can you imagine? He is one of the dirtiest comedians out there. If you've seen the movie The Aristocrats,
I have, and I've seen his, I've seen him in, do stand up before. So,
okay. You know, you're like, whoa, who would be married to this guy?
Yeah.
And what would it be like to be his children? And how do these things kind of reconcile? But the movie does all of that. It tells about his history, about his family. And he's, you know, there's very intimate stuff of him. And it turns out he's a really like shy, reserved, quiet man of few words. And soft-spoken and really caring and all of this other stuff. And you're just like, whoa, man. Where does that come from?
Yeah.
It's really, really interesting. And I don't talk about it much on this show. Not a lot of people know this about me. But stand-up comedy, not so much now, but when I was growing up, was a huge thing for me. I recorded on audio tape all of the stand-up comedy shows that were on television, and I listened to them all the time. I was a big fan of like Comic View, Evening at the Improv, Def Jam, Comic Strip Live, Half Hour Comedy Hour. I watched all of those religiously, and I don't even know why. I just thought stand-up comedy was really, really cool, and I thought it was really, really interesting and funny. And Gilbert Gottfried, I saw the Cinemax Comedy Experiment, and he was so clean. Like when I was watching footage of it, I hadn't seen it since I was a kid, and I was like, wait, I saw this when I was a kid. Like my dad taped it, and my brother and I watched it all the time. He didn't get dirty, Sam, until he did that Aristocrats thing. And then it changed all, it changed his whole thing.
Interesting.
All right. Like I didn't even know that. I was like, wait a minute. He wasn't like super dirty back then. So yeah, it's just really, it was a good movie. Like I said, I just watched, it's called Gilbert. I thought it was awesome. Really, really well made movie. And I ended up liking him. And that's a big deal.
Does it address why he changes to becoming more of a dirty comedian and stuff?
It totally does. And it shows the fallout of when he did that 9/11 joke and when he did that joke about the tsunamis in Japan. Like it talks about like all of that stuff. It doesn't gloss it over. I don't know. To me, it's a really, really fascinating guy. Considering like a lot of people really hate him.
Yeah.
A lot of people really can't stand him. But I also was laughing a lot. Like he did this one thing where he was just like, I'd like to share. And this is not a good impression of him because you really have to scream to do impression of Gilbert Gottfried. But he was like, I'd like to share an old Jewish expression with you. And then he just scrunches up his face. And that's it. I was like, oh my God.
Interesting.
It killed me. It was so funny. Anyway, that's all I got, man. And that was those were your five as well. Do we want to talk about things that we are looking forward to, things that are coming out in the near future? Totally. Tell me what your I always forget. Are you into Star Wars or no?
I am. I already have tickets.
Oh, well, that answers my question. I don't have a ticket for. I'm just going to, like a normal person, go see it. But, well, so you're stoked about this The Last Jedi?
Yeah, I am stoked about watching the next one. My fiance is huge into Star Wars too. So
right.
We got tickets and they tend to sell out here and we want to go opening night. So anyway, we're making a big deal of it. So I'm excited about Star Wars for sure. I really, for like that's coming out now or really soon, Wonder looks like it's probably an amazing movie. And then the other two that are coming out early December are Downsizing and Bright. Those two look really interesting to me.
Yeah. Is Bright coming to theaters or is that a Netflix show? Like, what is it? That's the one with Will Smith, right?
It is Will Smith. And I thought it was, I don't know if it's a Netflix new show or if it's, you know, I don't know. But it has a lot of people in it I like. Obviously, Joel Edgerton. Noomi Rapace, Edgar Ramirez. I think it looks pretty interesting. And then I think Downsizing looks hilarious to me. So we'll see.
Yeah. I didn't hear Justice League in there. No.
So the only thing that I feel like I will like about Justice League is Wonder Woman.
You are correct.
And so I am totally fine just waiting for a video on that one because I don't know that I want to sit in a movie theater to watch all the rest of the parts that I am going to just be like, meh about.
I hear you, man. No, I went to see that Batman vs. Superman just to say I was in the seat when Wonder Woman showed up on the big screen for the first time. And I was not disappointed. Really, really very happy with that. I got a lot that I want to see coming up very, very soon. I am very much looking forward to The Florida Project, which is a new one from Sean Baker, the guy that made Tangerine. It is not shot on iPhone. It's shot on 35mm, but I loved Tangerine, and it looks like a really cool movie. I'm also, of course, going to see Star Wars because I grew up on Star Wars. And as it turns out, I watched that Phantom Menace. Not Phantom Menace. What was that one? The most recent one? The Force Awakens. I watched that a lot. I get home.
Mm-hmm.
Like I saw it in theaters too. I loved that. So cool. I like it because of Rey and Finn. They're so great. Those two.
Yeah.
I don't care if they put old Star Wars people in them. I mean, I know it's neat that Luke's going to be there and that Han was there. And, of course, Carrie Fisher. Oh, God, how's that going to feel watching her? Oh, I just thought of that. That's going to be, oh. But also, a bunch of stuff that I really want to see. The Shape of Water, Guillermo del Toro's.
Oh, that's actually on my list, too. Why? Yeah. I forgot that one. And, that one looks really good.
Disaster Artist, the one with James Franco and his brother. They play the real life Tommy Wiseau, yes. Whatever his name. The guy that made The Room, a movie that I think is fine, and I can't stand the bro-y fandom that's around it. I'll be talking about that. Let's put it that way when I do that.
I have yet to see Room, so I probably should watch that before I watch Disaster Artist because it looks
just funny. You should just watch the movie. It's not good. It's super boring. But on YouTube, you can watch the supercut that just shows like the highlights of it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fine. You'll get it. I just don't. I don't see anything in making fun of a guy who had, you know, that just was inept at making movies. You know, I'm hoping for some sort of redemption that this isn't like a continuation of the broiness or whatever. Because the book it's based on, Disaster Artist, is a great book. Like, it really is.
Do you think, though, the guy that made the movies is actually excited that they're making a movie, even if it's making fun of him, him?
Yeah, because he embraced the fact that his movie was being made fun of. He just liked the attention and stuff like that, and he was happy people were watching, but I felt so sorry for him. I just was like, this sucks. Because the way it feels to go see The Room, God, I need to do this quickly. The way it feels to go see The Room is not the way it feels to go see any other sort of midnight movie like Rocky Horror or something like that. These people really viciously seem to hate and make fun of. It feels like bullies. It really feels like bullies. And I didn't like the way it felt to be in there. Very bro-y, very frat boy type compared to other midnight movies. I really wasn't into it. I think the sequel to Wolf Cop is coming out, and I loved Wolf Cop. It's like one of the better werewolf movies. I, Tonya, which is the Tonya Harding, the comedy. The first shot in the trailer has her putting out a cigarette with her ice skate. I was like, very, very John Waters. I, Tonya looked very exciting to me. I'm probably looking forward to that almost as much as Star Wars, to be honest with you. So,
nice.
But I think, and Lady Bird. Greta Gerwig's movie. She's the director and maybe the writer. I'm not sure. So how about that? Well, that's a mega list, isn't it? And I'm gonna go see Justice League. I'm gonna go see Justice. I gotta see Wonder Woman. I don't care what she's doing. They could just show her picking her nose. I'm here for it.
That's funny.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, hey, let's. I got something to tell you. So let's say bye to everybody and let's be normal.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening to Cinema Podcast. Bye-bye.